Hello, this is Mark Luke Carrier, welcoming you to another episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Now, in the last episode, we mentioned very briefly the limits of scientific testing. Today, we're going to take a more in-depth look at this fascinating subject. In the popular imagination, science has the ultimate answer for everything. That's perhaps why we entertain images of a white-smocked researcher looking up from his or her microscope and proclaiming, "Yes, this is without a doubt a Rembrandt." But that, as I've mentioned before, happens only in the movies. Testing supports an attribution, often by revealing inconsistent elements that prove an attribution to be erroneous. Here's a theoretical example. We submit a painting attributed to Rembrandt for testing. Should the test reveal that the painting contains pigments that are incompatible with the palette of the 17th century, like Prussian blue, for example, which appeared only in the 19th century, then we'd know for certain that the painting is not a Rembrandt. No further studies are needed. But suppose analysis shows that the pigments used are consistent with those available in the 17th century, and age testing of the wood in the frame shows that it dates from the same century. What have we proven? Simply that the work is indeed a 17th century painting. No more, no less. The objective scientific study thus adds a positive element to the balance, tipping the scales of attribution towards Rembrandt. The absolute authentication of the work, however, remains in the hands, or should we say the eye, of the connoisseur. An informal survey of conservation scientists reveals that one can spend anywhere from $5,000 to $8,000 there really is no limit of how much money you can spend for testing in support of an attribution. But the point is that testing for this purpose is finite. There's a multitude of scientific expertise one can subject the work to with the goal of revealing unseen damage and developing a strategy for conservation. But you can't perform endless analysis of a painting until all hopes of supporting an attribution have faded. An article entitled "Accounting for Art" by Tim McKeague in the Canadian magazine Maisonneuve, October and November 2005 edition, demonstrates the subtle relationship between art and science. Addressing the efforts to fix a painting's attribution to high Renaissance artist Andrea del Sarto, and setting out to show how the objectivity of science can eliminate most human errors, the article states, quote, "Using X-rays, the gallery's conservation team plunged past layers of century-old paint to the canvas upon which the artist drew a preliminary sketch of the painting. Franklin," that's David Franklin, curator of Prints and Drawings, National Gallery of Canada, "was convinced, peering at the initial sketch, that his team could determine whose hand had drafted the blueprint, held the brushes, and painted the mystery." Close quotations. This is an excellent example of how science facilitates a study. The expensive and sophisticated X-ray device provided the curator and his team with a clear view of the original sketch, but the final attribution rested on an even more complex apparatus, namely David Franklin's well-trained eye. An attribution is not a scientific determination. It's an informed opinion, and Franklin concluded that the work in question was not by Andrea del Sarto. Now, next week, we shall initiate a look at Han van Meegeren. Now, Han van Meegeren is such an interesting case, such an interesting study, that he probably will cover one or two or three episodes. He was a man who found himself in a courtroom in Holland after the war, being accused of colluding with the Nazis, with the occupier. And he found himself in the unique position of standing in court and saying, "I'm not a Nazi collaborator, I'm just a crook." Did it work? Well, we'll see. Well, that's it for this episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Please subscribe, and if you're a victim of art fraud, please write to me. My email is fakesandfrauds, all in one word, at writeme.com. In closing, please note that a illustrated print version of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies is available at Amazon worldwide in Kindle or paperback format. So this is your host, Mark Luke Carrier, saying bye-bye for now.